south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, remember in the last show, I mentioned that maybe this Sunday, that's today, December 18th, 2022, there'd probably be a repeat show because I was way out in the boonies in the jungle with no signal. Well, that didn't happen. The plans have changed and we're live today. Postponed my trip to the rainforest till next week. So you can expect the show that's supposed to come out on Friday, December 23rd, 2022, to most likely be a repeat. That said, on with today's really big shoe. First off, I've noticed that with Fed raising interest rates, the interest rates you get on CDs and long-term bank account deposits in dollars here in Latin America have been creeping up accordingly. I'm seeing interest rates in dollar accounts up to 8.5% per year. Sounds great, huh? But, you know, if you dig deeper into the facts, you'll find that even if you get 8.5%, you're still losing, getting gouged. Inflation slowly but surely is wiping you out. However, you won't think that if you believe government statistics. They say that inflation's coming down. It's 7.1% this quarter, right? If you have a half a brain, you know that's total bullshit. It's more like double or triple that. You can prove that to yourself if you write things down. That is, keep track of your own accounts and expenses. If you keep good records and you've got the time and the inclination, go back and total up everything you spent last year. And when December 31st hits this year in, what, a week or so, go ahead and tell me you spent around 7% more than last year. I'll bet anything, this year compared to last year, you spent over 20% more. So even if you're down here in Latin America and you put your U.S. dollars into a bank account at 8.5% and you feel good about that, it's just an illusion. The problem is when governments invent those inflation figures, they leave out big parts of food and energy. Did you know that in the government's inflation figures, food and energy only account for 4% of that figure? That's real convenient and honest, huh? Since you probably spend over 25% of your income on food and energy. And remember, even if you don't have a car and you use public transportation, you have to figure that in as energy costs too. By the way, everyone talks about how good Black Friday sales were at $9.2 billion, up 2.2% from last year. But when you figure in the government's own fake inflation statistics of 7.1%, as explained, it's more like 20%. Even with the government's own fake inflation statistics, that gives Black Friday sales a negative 5.5% over last year. In reality, more like a negative 15% if you take the true inflation statistics into account. So anyway, once you get down here to Latin America, should you put your U.S. dollars into one of those accounts yielding 7 or 8%? Well, it's better than a swift kick in the huevos. But in the end, it'll hurt your bottom line just as much. The point is, if you're sticking dollars in a supposed high-earning account, it's one step forward and two steps backwards. You don't need to do the math to realize it's a fake fantasy. All right, now, we've got an email from Colleen, a high school counselor in an upscale Chicago school district called Highland Park. She says, Johnny, longtime listener, in keeping up with your reasons to get the hell out of Dodge, I'm going to give you here reason 3,456, 7, 8, and 9, why it's time to have a plan B and get the hell out of Dodge, even if you're a liberal public school employee. I want to give you some reasons why. I'll be leaving for the greener pastures of south of the border myself very shortly. She says, as a high school counselor who's had it up to here in an upscale Chicago suburban school district, I've got one comment to make about American adolescent kids. They are not okay. She says they're facing intense mental health issues that cannot be corrected. Kicked into high gear by the pandemic, of course, but also predating it. It all started about 2008 when I started witnessing girls, especially girls, with extreme self-esteem and body dysmorphic issues. I even have a report right in front of me from the U.S. Surgeon General who calls adolescent mental health issues a devastating situation. Parents, educators, and us counselors know the problem is massive and that 30 to 40% of kids are on SSRIs and depressed. our schools are not equipped to handle all the head cases and body mutilators that we're seeing daily. She says, people don't realize that suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people ages 15 to 24, and it's Gen Z that's facing this major crisis. Most of us school counselors agree that TikTok is a disease. She says, psychiatric hospitals for adolescents and young adults are a definite growth industry. All right, me, Johnny, here piping in. Must be wonderful places to work, huh? Those psychiatric hospitals for adolescents. With nurses and nurses' aides drugging up kids, tightening and loosening straitjackets. Hey, now there's an idea. What about a Gucci and Tommy Hilfiger line of designer straitjackets? A new fashion accessory could go viral, be all the rage. You think? Anyway, then Colleen goes on to say, Johnny, with the IT world in our hands now, did you know there are many mental health apps that have popped up and you can download on your phone? Some of them, she says, created by slightly disturbed and unstable young people like Amanda Southworth, who's had a mental health support app since 2016. She herself has made many past suicide attempts and had spent time in psychiatric hospitals from age 18. Sounds like the perfect person to put your confidence in, right? Then she says, should disturbed kids really be downloading her app? An app that says, for example, the world is kind of losing its shit? So us Gen Zers are just sitting back saying, what's the point of living? On top of that, the girl who wrote the app says, we have lots of mental health problems in our generation, and we've inherited a world that's really scary. And we kind of felt our adults could fix it. But now we realize they're the ones who caused it. She also explains on her app that our social safety nets have failed us to the point where being admitted to a mental health hospital has become kind of a symbol of being one of the only places where you can be tended to and formally say to yourself, I'm not dealing with life very well. That I'm not to blame. The adults in the room have caused this. All right. Me, Johnny, here again. All I can say is I'm so glad I live in Latin America. I'm sorry, but I don't want to live in a world with all those hyper-fragile snowflakes, their SSRAs, their green hair, their face piercings, their addictions to TikTok, Twitter, and antisocial media. By the way, there's something new I'm seeing on the streets here in some of the medium and large cities in Latin America. I'm starting to see more and more nose rings, and almost exclusively in girls, not guys. Oh, and nose rings of a different sort. Not the ones you normally see stuck on one side of the nose or other. I'm talking about rings that hang equilaterally between the two nostril holes, right in the center of your face, on the part called the columella. That's columella. Picture the nose ring on a bull. It goes through that very same fleshy part. So I guess the latest nose ring fad is not to have it placed in one nostril or the other. It's right in the center, like a bull. Which begs the question for me anyway. How does one blow his or her honker with one of those things hanging in the middle, right in the way? What if you sneeze or have a snot attack? Does it impede blowing efficiency or impede the act of snorting coke or fentanyl, as is the habit with many adolescents and young adults these days? Just wondering. But to be fair, here in Latin America, I only see the most entitled, upscale kids sporting that latest trend. All mostly college-age wastrels, and occasionally on young U.S. and European tourists, too. But as far as what I think about the massive increase in Generation Z head cases, by the way, the definition of Gen Z is 25 years old or under. I'm thinking, what could have caused all that trauma? They didn't fight in any wars. They don't, God forbid, wear hand-me-down clothes from their brothers and sisters. What a trauma that would be. Let's see, they didn't live through the trauma of a dust bowl or depression. Oh, and they weren't forced to walk everywhere or take public transportation. They have cars or daddy's and mommy's cars or Ubers. Let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, they had parents with money who indulged them. So they never had to get a soul-crushing after-school job. How embarrassing would that be if their friends happened to see them stocking a shelf at Walmart? Nope, that's right, they had no such traumas in their lives. They probably had the softest, easiest childhoods in all American, even world, history. So then, what could it be? What could be the trigger for all those Gen Z head cases? The thing is, somehow, once they saw some body mutilator or transitioner on TikTok talking about depression and oppression and how society owes them, that's when they realized something wasn't right with the world and they had some of those same mental issues too. After all, every day should be roses and sunshine and continuous dopamine hits, right? Hey, that's how my life is. How about yours? Haha. Meanwhile, we, the so-called normal people, are supposed to be the ones that need to understand and sympathize how all that massive TikTok drama is holding back a whole generation of slackers. Yeah, right. It's our fault, so we owe them. So as for you, Colleen up there in Highland Park, Chicago, yep, you hit the nail on the head. That's reason 356, 7, 8, squared, cubed, and to the X power. Why, there's no hope for the Gen Zers. I repeat, I'm so glad I live in Latin America. By the way, how's your plan B coming? Speaking of TikTok, otherwise known as Dick-cock, did you know that's the number one way Mexican drug cartels recruit kids? They actually post gun parties where they've got a bunch of young adolescent kids running around with Uzis and AK-47s, blasting away, having a great old time. Sort of a modern version of cowboys and Indians with real guns. Wait a minute. Can you still say cowboys and Indians? Well, I just did. Anyway, TikTok gun parties. Yep, that's how they recruit adolescent kids into the Mexican cartels. Yeah, right. Meanwhile, the platform censors real doctors who report adverse effects on their patients who've been vaxxed. They're censored, and it's called disinformation. Makes sense, right? They censor real doctors that have information that goes against the grain, but permit drug cartels to recruit adolescent kids. Nice. Social media really is poisonous. All right, changing gears. Here's something you didn't know. Well, maybe you did. There are only 3 countries in the world that protect the right to bear arms in their constitutions. Those 3 countries, the U.S., Mexico, and Guatemala. That means in those 3 countries, at least, it's somewhat impossible to change because it would require rewriting the Constitution. However, of the 3, Mexico has been able to do an end run around the Constitution by only allowing 1 gun store in the whole country. You might have known that already. I spoke about that on a previous show a couple of years back. And that means to get a gun, you have to fill out all the pertinent paperwork, which is a lifetime's worth. And once that's complete, you have to fly to Mexico City to the gun store and go through some more processing, which could take weeks. So no one can really pull that off, not the average guy anyway, unless he or she lives really close to the gun store in Mexico City. Otherwise, the whole process will take a huge chunk of time out of your life. And most working people just can't do that. So what that means is, when I hear people ask me if Guatemala will ever tighten their gun laws, I'd say it's nearly impossible in our lifetimes anyway. Especially since the Guatemalan government makes so much money on gun and ammo sales, about 100% tax on that stuff. That means if there's a gun that you can buy in the States for $500, it'll be $1,000 in Guatemala. By the way, Brazil just voted in a new president, well, an old new president, Lula. He used to be president before, but went to jail. Which is kind of crazy that Latin American countries permit jailbirds to run for office, even the presidency. The thing is, Lula, a left-leaning closet socialist, is very anti-gun. Not that the previous president, his rival, Bolsonaro, was any better. They're all parasitic, lying sociopaths. By the way, isn't it funny? Once a socialist politician gets into high office, he always ends up a multimillionaire. How's that happen? Anyway, Lula's president now, and he has promised to disarm Brazil. By the way, Brazil has one of the largest handgun industries in the world. They export millions of Taurus handguns every year. Tell me you don't see any hypocrisy there. The thing is, under the previous president, Jair Bolsonaro, personal firearm ownership surged. Nearly 700,000 Brazilians took advantage of Bolsonaro's looser gun laws, registering as hunters, marksmen, or collectors. And now there are 1.9 million privately owned weapons registered in Brazil, more than doubling from just under 700,000 when Bolsonaro was first elected in 2018. And as you might imagine, gun owners are really pissed at Lula. So there's a real battle going on between gun owners and lefty liberal whiners. We'll see how that turns out. Time will tell, but I kind of think it won't be pretty. You know, it's not going to be pretty either as we see your gun rights being taken away from you up in the States. It's happening. It's inevitable. Drip by drip. One drop at a time. Your gun rights are being eroded. Then, of course, you end up like Chicago. 50 to 100 people each weekend shot with unregistered, illegally owned firearms. Because, you know, legal gun ownership for private, law-abiding citizens is not permitted. Meanwhile, criminals and no-goodniks can buy and sell them all day long. But you knew that already. You're so smart. That's why you don't get involved in politics, right? Because you're mostly honest, trustworthy, and smart. Oh, and if you're thinking you need just one more reason before you get the hell out of Dodge, listen to this article out of Business Insider magazine. It says nearly half of young adults in the U.S. are living at home with their parents now. It says with nearly half of the U.S. young adults living at home, a high not seen since the Great Depression. Turns out when these young adults are asked why they live with their parents, they say it's to save money. However, according to this article, they're lying. They're not saving money at all. They're spending what extra dough they have in lieu of rent and utilities on frivolous and disposable items, like designer clothes, watches, fast food joints, bars and restaurants, daily trips to Starbucks, and extended vacations. So it may appear they have enough money to have that kind of lifestyle, but it's only because most pay no rent or have utility bills. When adult kids are living at home, it's usually mommy and daddy paying those expenses. Even crazier, many studies show that when kids offer to pay rent while living at home, it's generally an inconsequential number, well below market value. And still, as a further example, a kid is paying, let's say, $200 rent to the parents. Studies show many, if not most, get behind in rent to their own parents because they know they can get away with it. By the way, oddly enough, when I read this article, I immediately thought of one of my own family members who's been living with her mother for years. She works a full-time job and is supposed to pay only $200 a month to live there, and she's chronically behind on the rent payment to her mother. So believe me, there's nothing about this article that's far-fetched. Far from it. Which brings us to this interesting email I just got from Steve. He says, Johnny, been a listener for about a year and a half. I'm 41 years old, living in New Hampshire. I'm having an ongoing argument with my good friend I went to high school and college with. My friend has a finance degree. We both have different economic outcomes, though. He still lives at home at 41 and works minimum wage as a Walmart associate and is addicted to Netflix. I, however, have a six-figure income with my own house and a rental for income. He says, my friend knows in 2 years I plan to sell all and have a plan B. You've intrigued me about a better life, Johnny, so I'll be getting out of Dodge. Probably in Guatemala or El Salvador. He says, I've discussed this with my friend a lot. He says, if I go down south of the border, he will visit me, but he, being 110% American, could never leave the States permanently. However, I think it's because he couldn't survive without living under his parents' umbrella. Anyway, Johnny, once I get my plan B going, I don't want him coming down and living in my basement. He might decide he likes it south of the border way too much. All right, Steve, Johnny here, just my 2 cents here. You know, they don't have basements here in Latin America, but I get what you mean. You don't want him living permanently in your guest room. Then he says, my friend Johnny is a very woke type guy and pulls the blue lever no matter who is on the ballot. For example, Johnny, I personally took the jab, but only one and refused the rest of them after getting a raging fever right after that first jab. But my woke friend took all 3 pokes. He was such a fan of lockdowns that for a while at the COVID peak in 2021, he would not even stand close to me or shake my hand unless I used that hand goop. That was until he got COVID himself and was laid up for 3 weeks in bed after 3 jabs, too. Though he calls me brainwashed by the fringe when I talk about getting out of Dodge. I wonder how many people who get it have woke friends like that. We'll always be friends. We've known each other for so many years. But there are topics we just can't talk about. All right, Steve, my 2 cents again. Fact is, I've got one of those, a childhood friend who's kind of woke too, but he's flexible. Unfortunately, though, I have some family members that are woke. They think I'm an alarmist, and I think they're sheep. Thankfully, though, they're up in the States, and they're never going to come down here to visit me. At least, I hope not. By the way, that's one of the beauties of getting the hell out of Dodge. You can jettison all those wokesters that were so hard to deal with in your own social circle. You can jettison those time vampires, too. Anyway, then Steve says, Johnny, maybe I'm just a tad jealous of my friend. He has a nice safety net and says no matter what, his boomer parents will leave him 2 cars and a fully paid for house. Must be nice, but I still can't help but think something's not right about this world. And that the USA leads the way in that kind of psychosis, that kind of unsustainable thought process. Then Steve says, if I had an adult kid, unless he was sick or going through some severe unemployment crisis, he won't be living with me for free. He says, Johnny, that's one of the reasons I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. Though it might sound selfish, I'm of the opinion that 18 to 20-year-old men, or man-boys, are the biggest loser generation in U.S. history. Weak, lazy, whiny, entitled, and half of them living with mom and daddy. More concerned with pronouns and Twitter than getting a job. I might sound like a jerk, but I can't stand to be around them. And I've got more than a few friends in that boat. I see their young adult living kids lounging around, cemented in front of the TV, watching Netflix too. He says, just wait about 5 years or so, when all the boomers are gone or in nursing homes. You've heard, I'm sure, that there is the greatest wealth transfer in history going on between boomers and their kids. Betcha 10 to 1 in time. Boomers' kids blow their inheritance between cars, vacations, Rolexes, cruises, and Vegas. I bet most will piss it away. He finishes by saying, it's a sad finish to a fantastic post-World War II story. It will get much sadder. Signed, Steve from New Hampshire. All right, Steve, thanks for that. You know, I totally get it. I've got an entitled nephew whose parents doted on him all his life. In his late teens and early 20s, he wrecked four of his daddy's cars. Parents had money. They got divorced. He lived in his mommy's house for years. Never lifted a finger to pay anything or help her out, though he always had some kind of job. And finally, when he hit around 30 and his mother couldn't stand him around the house anymore and he wouldn't leave, his idiot parents got together and compromised. They bought him a house. Some compromise, huh? I'll tell you, Steve, I wouldn't be able to stand being around that kid either. Luckily, I'm down here in Latin America and I don't have to see him or be around him. So how about you listeners out there? Do you have one or more of those in your family? Like I said, one of the easiest ways to distance yourself from that kind of madness is to get the hell out of Dodge. Go south of the border. It'll do wonders for your attitude and mental well-being. Then again, maybe you're used to living in chaos and dystopia. You know what they say about birds who live in gilded cages? You open the door and sometimes they're too conditioned to step out. All right, now something we've never hit on before. You know, lots of gringos and expats come down to Latin American cities and towns and marvel at the historic districts. They go all the way back to the 16th and 17th century, the conquistador days. Lots of old rustic buildings in disrepair that are actual registered historic landmarks. Practically every well-known town and city in Latin America has a designated old town or historic district. Oddly enough, lots of historic landmark buildings that are privately owned come up for sale. So many gringos and expats, especially those with do-it-yourself abilities and skills, have a secret or not-so-secret passion to buy up one of those fantastic old buildings and turn it into a bar, a restaurant, a home, a boutique hotel, a spa, you name it. It's been done many times. And in whatever city or town you're looking at such a building, the local historical society would be glad for you to buy it up and restore it. Because, you know, local historic societies in Latin America don't have the dough to do pretty much of anything. That's why when you're walking around a historic place like Antigua, Guatemala, Grenada, Nicaragua, Cartagena, Colombia, Mexico City, lots of places in Mexico, if you take a walk through one of those historic districts, especially at night, you'll just be blown away at how beautiful those old buildings are, especially since most cities with such buildings are smart enough to put spotlights and gardens, fountains, and flower beds right where the tourists walk to make those buildings look extra special, mystical, and even unearthly, especially at night. However, if you happen to be walking around the very same area the next day in the noonday sun, you'll notice most of those buildings need lots and lots of work. Most are just cracked and crumbling away. So, local governments would love you to pick up a building like that when they come on the market, and they do come on the market once in a while. In fact, they're quite eager for gringos and expats who they figure have lots of money to step in, do the repairs, bring the place up to code, and bring it back onto the tax rolls. But, just to let you know, there's a lot more to it than you think. Governments, all Latin American governments, require owners of historic houses and buildings to maintain them in good condition and bring them up to code in spite of the extremely high costs of doing so. Because, you know, you have to remember, those places were built when they didn't have electricity or indoor plumbing, telephone lines, or any kind of insulation at all. Some of them have walls that are 3 or 4 feet thick. Imagine trying to run electrical or plumbing lines through walls that thick. The other problem is, all of them leak like sieves, too, in some way or another, especially those structures with wooden roofs. In fact, a lot of the older historic buildings you'll see from the street don't even have a roof. They've long since caved in or rotted away, but you can't see that from your angle on the street. Though that's not to say that stopped gringos and expats from buying those buildings and giving it a shot. Fact is, though, everyone who's ever had one of those buildings will tell you it's a monetary black hole, bottomless money pit. And unlike the first world, if you have a historic building, you'll get no help from the local government. Though they might throw in for the bronze plaque, designating your new money pit as a historic monument. Whoopee. So again, it doesn't matter which Latin American city's historic district you happen to be in, and which old colonial building's for sale. Don't think if you buy it to remodel it, you're going to get any help, because there's no government policy anywhere in Latin America to preserve privately held historic buildings. Now, after talking to a number of Latin American architects and historic researchers, you know you're bound to meet them along the way if you have any interest in those kind of buildings, and you're a frequent visitor of historic sites and museums. There are always a few historic preservationists around. Hey, it's big business for artists and craftsmen, too. Woodworkers, carvers, metalworkers, tapestry and statue restoration artists, etc., etc. Down here, there are so many very, very old chapels, churches, and cathedrals. If you're ever on the lookout for a restoration expert, just knock on the nearest rectory door. It seems like there's a Catholic church, convent, or chapel about every 2 or 3 blocks. Anyway, historic preservation types will tell you that just maintaining a historic building can drain your pocketbook in a hurry. After all, the guys doing the restorations can't just run over to the local hardware store or lumber yard to get their adobe, wood, stone, clay, reeds, roof tile, brass, plaster, marble, and all that stuff. It's all specialty work with specialty materials. And though you yourself might be quite handy and think yourself a great do-it-yourselfer, the question is, how are you with stone, brass, and marble? Those are three materials the average do-it-yourselfer has little or no experience with, best left to experts. And since that's all custom work, the prices will reflect that, too. Now, just to rub it in your face a little bit, let's take the city of Cuenca, Ecuador, because I've got some data on the historic district there. Turns out of 3,400 registered historic buildings in the city center, most of them owned by the government, about 170 of the privately owned ones have been sent notices by the city ordering them to maintain their properties and stop letting them fall into ruin. Not that the owners have the dough to do that, or they probably would have already. But as it turns out of the 170 buildings falling into ruin, 145 are in terrible shape, 21 are in ruins, and 4 are classified as damaged, but with some effort, repairable. And according to local historians, practically every one of those owners would be willing to negotiate a sale. I wonder why.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!